Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk, first heard here on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday from 1pm. And you can catch us again on a Thursday evening at 9pm. Or if you prefer a podcast, well, that drops on a Friday. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your technology programme. We're really keen to hear about what's working for you, what should be working for you in the world of technology. So do get in touch, a voice note or an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about how Microsoft spent Global Accessibility Awareness Day, and Callum Stoneman will be along demonstrating the WeWalk Smart Cane. Speaking of Callum Stoneman, here he is. Welcome in, sir. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, not too bad. It's been a busy week. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, it has. It has. Did you enjoy it? Well, last week, of course, was Global Accessibility Awareness Day. How did you spend that moment?
It was a good day for me. Yeah, I was down in London, so I was down south with work. We had quite a few accessibility focused events for our teams and our developers, and it was great. Went down really well.
Oh, there you are. I was in London as well. I wish I'd known. I could have met up for a glass of lemonade, Callum. Oh, well, maybe next time. Yeah, so we were invited to Google to look at some of their developments. So I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that as the year progresses. And also got a chance to pop into RNIB's new building, the Grimaldi building on Pentonville Road. And that's really coming on a treat. So let us know how you spent your Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Were there any announcements that grabbed your attention, or do you think it was more rhetoric than reality? Keen to know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. All right, Callum, it's Tech Talk.
Many organisations celebrated this year's Global Accessibility Awareness Day, from the small startups to the technology giants, and it doesn't get much bigger than Microsoft. Our very own Dave Williams found out a bit more about how they're planning to mark the occasion this year.
To celebrate the 2023 Global Accessibility Awareness Day, we've come to Microsoft in London, where we're delighted to be joined by Jenny Leigh Flurry, who is the Chief Accessibility Officer at Microsoft, and Hector Minto, who is the Chief Evangelist for Accessibility at Microsoft. A very warm welcome both to RNIB Connect Radio. I'm delighted to be with you. Tell me, how will you be celebrating Global Accessibility Awareness Day? Let's start with you, Jenny.
Well, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for coming to Microsoft. And GAD is a wonderful thing. I always firstly have to give a big call out to Joe Devon and Jennison Ashen from now LinkedIn, who were the founders of GAD, I think 12 years ago. So it's incredible how this has become a resounding call for action and awareness around accessibility every year. And, you know, just credit to them for what they've done. And Microsoft, amongst many companies, will be marking GAD and celebrating today with lots of announcements. And I think for us, that's different things that we're doing in terms of not just technology, but some of our programs, partnerships, and how we're empowering disabled talent to really tackle that disability divide. So we'll be launching lots of nerdery today, which makes me very, very excited.
Hector, how about you? How will you be celebrating Global Accessibility Awareness Day?
Well, we've just come off a week where we visited the Eurovision Song Contest in Liverpool to look at work we've been doing with the DWP to support people with disabilities into work. We've been looking at frontline workers, a very specific group of people who are not necessarily getting the technology they need to get into work. So in partnership with the DWP and the ACC Liverpool, who put on that amazing job at Eurovision, we've been training their staff in terms of how to employ people with disabilities using modern mainstream technology, particularly into jobs where you're catering, cleaning, security guards, etc. And we find this amazing crossover between disability and language and literacy. So English as a second language, but also literacy. So what we're really starting to see here in terms of the general accessibility conversation is this widening of the scope. People not just in traditional office jobs using technology, using computers, thinking about accessibility, but also people working in those frontline jobs. So yeah, we're particularly excited about that book.
Clearly, AI is a massive buzzword at the moment. Lots of people super excited by the technology behind ChatGPT. Jenny, specifically, what do you think will the benefits be for the disability community?
It's an exciting time. I mean, let's get grounded a little bit. AI isn't new. We've been working in AI for many years. In fact, our AI for Accessibility grant program's been running. This is its fifth year. But I think coming into this year, it went up a notch, thanks to some amazing innovation coming out of OpenAI, a company that Microsoft partners with a huge amount, which came out with ChatGPT. That they came into our search engine, and you've seen many, many announcements coming out since. It's hard to keep up, but essentially weaving AI capability into many of our standard products that you may know, like Microsoft Office. And so it's really, I've been at Microsoft 18 and a half years, and the innovation curve that we're on right now is super fun. And also a good reminder to stay really grounded. And I think there's big ramifications for accessibility. And we should also at the same time not forget the foundation that's so important to building inclusively and accessible, which is to make sure, you know, really we build everything accessibly. I mean, that's the first principle that we put in play right from the get-go, is as we go through this curve, make sure that what you build is good to use. Secondly, that it really leverages disability representative data. That's what AI is based on. It's a lot of data, these large language models. And thirdly, then innovate. And as we look at innovation, I think there's a couple of really big examples we can lean on that illustrate the possibilities. One of those is Be My Eyes, a great partner to Microsoft. We've worked with Be My Eyes since, 2017. In fact, if you call our support desk using Be My Eyes, you can get right through to one of our support engineers. They were able to launch with ChatGPT-4, which gives you the basic capability to take a picture, get really detailed descriptions and chat with the agent to, you know, say, where are my keys, and find exactly where they are, or open your fridge, see what's in your fridge, and then, well, give me a recipe suggestion. And so I think that at the core, there's the possibility of accelerating accessibility and providing more independence. And I think the next few months are going to be crucial on that journey.
So, given all those opportunities to access information and increase productivity, how do we make sure that those AI experiences are of high quality and also safe?
Yeah, I think it's great questions, and one that I think everyone is working on. It's imperative to us to, again, make sure that what we do meets the bar of user experience, and we are learning a lot on that journey. I mean, from the lens of accessibility, I stay very, very, very grounded to making sure that we build accessibly, we include the right data, we test with that data before we go off and explore these amazing possibilities of where it can go. And that same set of guided principles, in fact, that's a part of our Responsible AI Holistic Program, which goes into, there's actually six principles there that are guiding our approach to AI generally, and accessibility being one part of that. So, you know, think about this as a very principle-based approach, which is guiding everyone working in this space right now. So I would encourage folks to check out those responsible AI principles.
RNIB has also recently launched an initiative to design for every gamer, and accessible gaming is clearly an area in which Microsoft has invested heavily. For example, the Microsoft Xbox Game Controller Accessibility, and some titles now are more accessible. What do you think blind and partially sighted gamers can look forward to in the next year, do you think?
Well, I think the first one is Forza, which we were talking about just before. You know, so one, of course, accessibility in gaming is huge. A lot of that being driven from the UK. You've got some amazing, strong pushes, not just from RNIB, but some great advocates. We were talking about Sightless Combat earlier as one of many. And all of that work, I think, culminates into some features that are starting now to infiltrate some of these games that I think open doors to new possibilities. And Forza, for those, you know Forza. We were talking, you and your son play, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he's 14 and he shouts at me if I'm driving off the road.
Yeah, well, game on. Well, literally. But he's, I think... he's going to have fun with it. I think more importantly, you may have fun with this one. This is a new feature that was just set of features from Forza, which is created by Turn 10 Studios, to basically give blind low vision the capability to take a spin around the track. So it's a new set of audio cues, very, very detailed descriptions that gives lots of information, anything from where you are on the track, your orientation. It's always good to know if you're driving forwards or backwards. Your progress, turns, where you are with your gears, when to shift, all of that kind of stuff. So yes, it's actually Brandon Cole has been the accessibility, one of the consultants on it. And so I'm really excited to see how this one goes. That's just been announced. And I think it illustrates the possibilities.
Now, one of Microsoft's innovations that blind and partially sighted people tell us they really love is the Microsoft Soundscape Research Project, which has now moved into a new phase. And for those unfamiliar with Soundscape, it augments those core mobility skills that we already have. In some ways, it was a little bit game-changing by providing us with directional information. Jenny, can you talk us where we're at with the Soundscape technology?
Soundscape, we announced, Microsoft Research announced earlier in the year that project has moved to open source. So I believe that it's available now. I'll have to fact check and just make double check on that one. But yes, it's technology. Moving it to open source means that anyone can now download and develop on top of that.
Moving on then to seeing AI, we've seen the preview of the World Channel appear there that attempts to improve the way we navigate indoors. What is Microsoft's long-term commitment to the Seeing AI app, especially for those of us who rely on it on a day-to-day basis? It's become a bit of a go-to tool, I think.
Seeing AI is and still is and will be one of the most exciting areas of innovation and technology that I think empowers blind low vision. And I always love chatting with Saqib and just his vision for where he's... There is such a long list of priorities, and I know that everyone has a feature they want to see in Seeing AI, which is always a good indication. It is a heavily used app. It's loved and adored. And I just want to say thank you to everyone who joined us on that. It's an AI app that launched in 2017. So it's hard to believe, but it's already 6 years old. We just announced, and he announced at the Ability Summit in March, the addition of a new channel for indoor navigation. And that is available now. Do check it out. But trust, there is a long roadmap ahead, lots, particularly, you know, with what's happening in the area of AI and GPT. There is a lot of different avenues that we're pursuing with Seeing AI. So we remain deeply committed to that app.
Given Microsoft's huge portfolio of products and services that Microsoft delivers to the world, how do you make accessibility consistent across such a wide portfolio?
Oh, goodness. Well, we don't sleep. It's the first. But, you know, candidly, it is a responsibility that we take incredibly seriously. We are far from perfect. but we have an really, really high bar and expectation for everything that comes out of Microsoft. And I will say the same bar exists internally as well. And it's a constant moving ecosystem. You know, I've had the privilege of being in this role as CAO now for 7.5 years, and every year I see it maturing and taking another click forward, which is positive progress always, but there's always far more to do. But bluntly, it takes time, it takes energy, and it takes consistent reinforcement. Every Microsoft employee takes mandatory training on accessibility. That same training is what Hector mentioned in terms of being available to Department of Work and Pensions and some of the amazing staff in Liverpool. But we take this really, really seriously. And ever you don't have what you need, I urge you to give us a call. We really, really want that feedback.
We know that you've worked really hard to make sure that Microsoft products are accessible out of the box. I've recently been using Narrator a bit more as a backup. But when it comes to your digital stores and those third parties who develop using Microsoft tools and platforms, what expectations do you have of them when it comes to accessibility?
Well, I love that you're using Narrator. That was one area. Windows, I think, is always going to be such a core and key platform for us. We're deeply committed, and that amazing team. Because clearly, let's be blunt, this is not all me or Hector. There is an amazing array of people across the company that lead accessibility and work on it and take your feedback and prioritize what we're doing next. So Narrator's actually been one heck of a journey. Still more to do. Same with magnification and high contrast. And I think it's one great example of what we do going forward is to take that feedback in and then prioritize the roadmap as we go forward. But there was a second part to your question. Remind me, what was that?
Well, it's really about your expectations of those third-party developers who are using your tools, yeah.
You know, my ideal world, I think our ideal, every role, every job has accessibility as a part of it. And that's what we fundamentally believe. And we see a lot of success when we work with not just third parties, but also first parties internally. The developer segment, which is so big at Microsoft and so rich, when we have disabled talent and we're empowering that talent, we just, my goodness. So some of the work that's happened in Visual Studio as one example of that, they've actually just launched Accessibility Checker into Visual Studio, which is one of the major development platforms. I think from a third-party perspective, again, Microsoft believes in not just the inbox, what comes in Windows, but building an ecosystem that anyone can design and build on. That sets us a little unique in some ways, but it also means that our partnership with third parties is very important, whether that's Vispero or NVDA or any of the amazing companies that are building technologies that can sit on top of a Windows platform or using our code base. So it's a core requirement for us, and not just developers, but also, bluntly, I'll add in suppliers. Mm. We work with 20,000 suppliers, and we have made it a core requirement that accessibility is a part of that contract. So I think it's one of those, I use the words ecosystem, and that doesn't work for everyone. So maybe there's a better word, Hector, you can tell me. I've been living in the States a long time.
I think what you're talking about is the confidence we're trying to build in the tech sector to build more accessible technologies, yes, and to understand the benefit of doing it. You know, so there's this relationship between the buyer and the seller of technologies, whether that's in the consumer space, but you know, I would argue more specifically in the government and the enterprise space. I think what a lot of the work that we've been doing over the last number of years has raised awareness of what accessibility really is and what it means to make something functionally accessible, as opposed to just tell people that it is accessible. And I think our role is to help the tech sector more widely feel more confident to have this conversation with customers about the journey they're on accessibility. And we have definitely seen that.
And I hope, bluntly, in the next few months, we see a overwhelming interest in designing and building in our world.
Microsoft has a very busy disability answer desk. I believe you take around 13,000 calls a month. Sometimes, though, I find pockets of the community that just don't know it's there. How do we improve awareness and address that?
So Disability Answer Desk, we lovingly call it DAD, is our support team for disabled customers and employees. Actually, it has an internal side to it. It started a decade ago, in fact, almost 11 years ago. And I started it with a premise that good technical support wasn't available for disabled people from Microsoft. And we should fix that gap. And bluntly, spin forward, we've taken 1.5 million calls and counting. We take on average 12 to 13,000 calls a month. And it's from customers all over the world, many of whom are new to, they're newly disabled, they've acquired a disability. Good reminder that this is the one cool community that you can join at any point in your life. And they want to know what technology is available, or they have a situation, or they have a problem, or forbid they have seen an error, and they want to know how to fix that. And yes, it's a free service, anyone can call. And we're innovating with this service all the time. Our partnership between DAD and Be My Eyes that we just announced today on GAD is a good example of that, where you can now use Be My Eyes and GPT in addition to DAD. So you can take a picture of your service, get it described by GPT, and you may be able to solve it yourself before you need to talk to a human. But it's there for you to help you to accelerate your journey with the technology in your hands.
We're all familiar with the challenges of unlabeled images, inappropriate use of colour only to emphasise, or perhaps incorrect typography that can result in incorrect output. What do you think is the role of Microsoft's content creation tools to nudge creators to generate accessible content so that everybody can use it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I saw Hector lean in, so I'm sure he's got something here.
Come on in, Hector.
I do think we're on the same page. And accessibility isn't just about making stuff accessible to us cool folks in the community. It's empowering everyone to build accessible content. And so there is some new stuff on the horizon here.
Yeah, we announced it at the Ability Summit, the new accessibility live checking. Which essentially, as people are creating their documents, you've got this inline checking for accessibility. So we've been on a journey, right, with Accessibility Checker. It used to be completely hidden, file, inspect document to find it. Then it moved into the main toolbar. Then it moved to the lower taskbar. And now it's literally in the document. So there'll be a little person, whenever there's an accessibility error in the document, there'll be a little person there that will give not just the error, but it will give the inline fix and the recommendation for things like, as you say, good colour contrast. In terms of the rules that we're allowed to nudge people on, I think we're still on a journey there. So in an ideal world, we'd be nudging people to kind of, larger font sizes straight away. We've got to be slightly careful with that in terms of kind of what people's expectations are of Microsoft policing that experience versus just giving people positive nudges. But I think we're definitely on the right path, and this inline checking now is going to make millions more people around the world aware of what accessibility checking is, just from that simple change of putting it inline in doc.
As we draw to a close, I want to take the opportunity again to thank you both for taking the time to speak with us here at RNIB Connect Radio, and I want to wish you, on behalf of all our colleagues and listeners, a very happy Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And of course, our mantra is that accessibility happens every day, not just today. What final thoughts do you have for our listeners?
Well, I just love to say thank you to you and to the RNIB. You are the terrible humour, but the lighthouse, the beacon, the real champions for blind, low vision, partially sighted experience. And we're just honestly honoured to partner with you and to bluntly hear and encourage everyone out there to try technology. Let us know what you want. Let us know what you need and see us as your partner in crime as we go forward. It's always good to come home. I do live out in Seattle, but I'm from the middle of England, and I will always be very proud to be British. And so it's wonderful to celebrate GAD back here. And I look forward to seeing where this next year takes us.
Hector, any final thoughts from you?
I just love the journey we've been on with GAD. You know, it used to be kind of maybe more of a kind of internal conversation across the tech industry. Now I'm sitting with CIOs of travel, transport, entertainment, sports companies this week, you know, talking about the commitments they're making to accessibility, just because it's on way more people's radars than it was even five years ago. So I just think we're making great progress in this space. And this is a great day to, you know, to recognise that progress.
Jenny Leigh Flurry and Hector Minto, thank you for joining us on Global Accessibility Awareness Day.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
If you were tuned in last week, you may remember Callum Stoneman demonstrated the WeWalk app for getting out and about. Well, Callum's back now with part two, taking a look at the WeWalk Smart Cane.
Last week, I gave a quick overview of the WeWalk app that you can use for navigation instructions while you're out and about. And as I said in that demo, there are two parts to this. There are two parts to WeWalk's offerings. And the second part, which is optional, i.e. you can use the app without this if you want to. But the second part is the WeWalk Smart Cane. And we're going to go over this now. So all the fancy stuff, all the tech, is in the handle. So the actual cane, you do get a cane with this. You get like an Ambutech folding white cane. I'm not sure of the specifics. It's been a long time since I've used a cane, and I was never that great with them in the first place in terms of the type of tips and the material of the cane and all that kind of stuff. But this is a really nice lightweight cane that you get with this, and the cane comes without the rubber handle, and instead it's got a little adapter where you can screw on the WeWalk handle. You can use this with your own cane if you want to, so you get a little adapter with that. So if you wanted to take the rubber handle off your own cane for any reason and use the WeWalk handle with that, then you can do as well. I've personally chose to just have two canes so that, you know, if this one breaks or hate the thought of it, but if it gets lost, then at least I know I've got a backup and I've got my traditional cane there ready to go. The cane itself is no different. All the new bits, if you like, are in the handle. So from where the kind of cane sections stop and the handle, you know, starts, so coming up from that point, if that makes sense, the first thing you'll notice is that it's quite thick and it kind of thins out to the handle as you get towards the top, as you get to the points where you'd be gripping it. It thins out into more of a traditional sized cane grip, but it is quite thick at the bottom. The first thing you'll find is like an indented plastic circle, and this is the ultrasonic sensor that's used for the obstacle detection. So they say in their documentation that you want to try and keep your fingers away from this, don't press it in, basically don't mess with it, because it's an ultrasonic sensor, and I imagine by the sounds of it, it could be damaged fairly easily if it's pressed in, or if you hold the cane by that point, you know, rest your thumb on it or something. You wouldn't want to do that. And it would get in the way of the obstacle detection as well, obviously. Coming up from that, it thins out a little bit, and there's like a small kind of square area, a smooth kind of flat square area, very slightly indented. You might be able to feel that a little bit. That is the WeWalk touchpad. So that is what you can use to control the app and start navigation or move on to the next step of your navigation or check where you are. You would do it from using that. So you can do like one finger or two finger gestures on there. So for example, a two finger swipe right will turn on obstacle detection or toggle on and off obstacle detection. A one finger double tap brings up the menu. You can swipe left and right to navigate through the menu options and double tap to select them. So it'll be quite familiar if you're used to VoiceOver. Coming upwards from that, again, it gets much thinner as you go up. And there are two little, they describe them as buttons. And I guess they are. They do kind of feel like buttons. They feel almost like volume buttons to me. So you've got that traditional kind of volume down, if you like, on the left and volume up on the right, and with a little gap in the middle of them. But they're not actually buttons. You can't press these. They don't do anything. But what they're there for is, this is where WeWork recommend resting your thumb in between these little buttons so that you can better feel the vibrations that are coming from the obstacle detection feature. So when it picks up an obstacle that's not at cane height, well, when it picks up any obstacle really that's in your way, it will vibrate. And apparently WeWork suggest resting your thumb on there, and you can better kind of distinguish the vibrations from these buttons compared to the vibrations of the cane generally as it's, you know, rolling along the ground. I've not really found that to be the case. I can feel the vibrations fine because the whole handle vibrates. And then coming up further from that, there's your traditional rubbery feeling texture. And at this point, it's about the size, I would say about the size of a regular cane handle. And, you know, it feels like a traditional cane handle as well. And that's where I tend to hold it. And then at the very top, you've got two little holes for a wrist strap. So you do get a wrist strap with this. I've not chosen to use it. I've just found that it got in the way a little bit, to be honest. But you could use that if you wanted to. And then also on that very, very top edge, there's a micro USB port for charging. It would have been nice to see USB-C in this, because micro USB is the fiddly little connector that has to go in a certain way. But micro USB is what we've got. And you do get the micro USB to standard USB cable with it as well. So you get everything you need. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to head out on a route and I'm going to show you how the app and the cane tie together. I'm not going to comment too much on the obstacle detection because it's going to be quite a tough one to record, but I'm going to show you how you can start navigation through the app, what the directions sound like while you're out and about, and how you can move on to the next stage of your navigation. Because last week I mentioned that multimodal navigation, you can easily switch between walking and public transport directions and then back to walking, etc. And you can do that through the cane's touchpad. That's what the touchpad is there for. And you can do that without even touching your phone. So I'm going to head out now and we'll put all this together and try and hear it in action. So I'm stood near my front door. I've unfolded the cane and I've opened up the WeWork app. So the first thing I'm going to do is turn on the cane by holding that power button on the underside of the handle for a couple of seconds. It's vibrated. And we got that little tune. And it immediately started vibrating because the obstacle detection was on. So I just did a two-finger swipe right on the keypad to turn that off for a second. Now it's not automatically connected. So on the app, I'm just going to look for that connect your smart cane button.
My current save, check, explore, connect your smart cane.
There it is. Button. Double tap.
Searching for WeWalks around you. This may take a few seconds. Ellipsis.
That ding you heard was from the cane, so it's connected. Now, at this point, if I wanted to, I could just double tap on the cane's touchpad and I would get the My Places, and I could select one of the places and select a route and start navigating all from the cane. But to speed things up, I'm just going to start the route from the app and then we know that we've got the right one. So I'm going to go to that.
Profile. Tab. Selected.
So I'm going to go to My Places.
My Places. But My Places, WeWork, Bolton Bus Interchange, 3.40 kilometers, straight, Bolton Bus Interchange, 3.4, Newport Street, go there, button.
Click on go there.
From your current location, button.
Walking, 48 minutes.
Transport, 21 minutes.
The app and VoiceOver talk over each other sometimes for some reason, but I'm going to look for the transport route that involves the number 7.
Walking, transport, 23 minutes. Walking, then 7, then walking.
That's the one. Double tap.
Your destination from your is current 3.42 location. Kilometers away. Estimated travel time is 23 minutes. Your journey consists of 1 public transportation vehicles and 320 meters walk. Double tap to start navigation.
So you could double tap on the cane's touchpad to start navigation. I'm just going to start it from here.
Back button. Navigate. Start. Button.
Double tap on start.
Head straight on Beaumont Preview. Chase for 280 Button. Metres.
Speech off.
And I'm just going to turn voiceover speech off just to stop them talking over each other. Put the phone in my pocket and let's head out. And I'll let you hear some of the directions coming from the app, and then I will come back when we get to the bus stop.
Turn right onto Beaumont Chase in 70 metres. Turn right onto Beaumont Chase in 40 metres. Turn right onto Beaumont Chase in 20 metres. Head on Beaumont Chase. Turn sharp left onto Beaumont Chase in 70 metres. Turn sharp left onto Beaumont Chase in 20 metres. Head slightly left on Beaumont Chase for 80 metres.
And that little ding ding sound means that you've completed that step and it's moved on to the next one. And it picked that up quite quickly actually, from me turning left.
Turn sharp right onto Wigan Road in 40 metres. You're close to the destination. Press the I've arrived button to go to the next step. The destination will be on your left in 10 metres.
Right, so now that I've got to the bus stop, I'm just going to do one finger flick up.
I've arrived.
On the touchpad, so I've arrived, and double tap.
7 Bolton, 4 minutes.
And now it's going to count down for when the number 7 to Bolton will arrive.
7 Bolton, 3 minutes. Seven Bolton, 2 minutes.
I've now just got on the bus. Again, a one finger flick up on the touchpad. Should take me to...
Got on.
Got on, and doors up.
Now, Addington Road.
And now Addington Road is the stop that I'm currently at. And it will keep counting down the stops and give me alerts when I'm approaching the Bolton interchange. Now, I've stopped the recording there because tracking the stops is what should have happened. And normally what it would do is, as I said there, it would give me the, for example, it said there, now you're at Addington Road. And then as I was traveling on the bus, it would say now, and then, you know, the next stop. And then it would keep going and keep telling me what stop I was at as I was approaching them. And then, as I've mentioned before, the whole, you know, two stops away, one stop away, and then when you're at your stop, it would give you alerts and vibrations to let you know. What actually happened was it got stuck on the previous location. So when you looked at the app and, you know, went through it with voiceover, on the screen, it was showing as if it was using the public transport directions and it was showing as if it's tracking the stops and it had the got off button. But the instructions that it was actually giving you, it wasn't keeping up with the stops that I was approaching, and it was constantly just saying that the destination is in 300 meters, 600 meters, 1 kilometer. The destination was getting further and further away, and what it sounds like to me is that although the screen had changed when I navigated, as I said, in the app, and when I flicked left and right on the touchpad, it was saying that I was at Addington Road stop. So it was on the transport mode but not respecting that, and as far as it was concerned, it was still thinking that I was walking to the bus stop, and therefore it just wasn't picking up on the bus moving at all. It was seeing that as me going wrong. So not sure what's gone on there. We will pass that on to WeWalk, and, you know, hopefully they can get it resolved or let me know if I'm doing something wrong. But normally that works really, really well. But everything that I was doing, and I will just say as well, that was obviously all very heavily edited, in case you're thinking, wow, the buses in that area are quick. That's not the case. That bus was actually late, if you're interested. So, you know, pretty typical. But the beauty of that, when it works, is that all them things that I was doing, as soon as I got on the bus, well, as soon as I got to the bus stop, it was just a quick swipe on the touchpad so that I've arrived. and double tap on that. And then, you know, the directions changed. As soon as I got on the bus and sat down, just same thing again, flick up and, you know, click on got on. And then in the ideal world, when I got to my stop, I could do the same thing again, click on got off, and, you know, switch back to the walking direction. So you don't even have to touch the phone. The phone could be in your pocket, in your bag, or something like that. And that is really where the beauty of that touchpad comes in. Without that working, obviously that does take away some of the usefulness, but in fairness, that is an app issue rather than a cane issue, I would say. I think that's a problem with the app responding to directions and responding to what the data that it's getting, rather than it being an issue with the cane itself. As I said, the obstacle detection can be a bit hit and miss as well. And we are going to have a bit more of a discussion next to just kind of wrap this up and, you know, go through some of the pros and cons. But that is a quick demo and overview of the WeWalk app and the WeWalk Smart Cane.
Thank you to Callum Stoneman there for your demonstration of the WeWalk Smart Cane. Callum, I know you found a couple of little niggles, but overall, is a smart cane something that you could see yourself using long term?
It's a difficult one because I do like this and I like the features that it offers, but I just think they need a bit of work. I mean, like the obstacle detection, for example, that took a lot of getting used to, because for me, at least on the default setting, which is kind of the mid-range setting, it was just vibrating all the time. And I wasn't sure, even when I was fairly confident that there was nothing there, it was still vibrating and picking things up. What did help, though, was tweaking the settings, because you can go in and you can set different detection lengths. So you've got kind of minimum, low, mid, which is the default, and then I think there's high and maximum as well. So you can change those, and obviously the higher you've got it set, the further away it will pick up obstacles. So I've got it on the low setting at the minute, and I am finding that a bit more reliable. There's still the odd occasion where it buzzes and I'm not entirely sure why, but it is good. It takes a lot of tweaking and figuring out. It's got some interesting use cases as well. Like, for example, in my workplace, the main reception, kind of the office, can be quite noisy, and the lift doors, because they're quite new, fancy, modern lifts, the doors tend to be pretty quiet when they open, and there's a couple of them that don't give you the doors opening announcement. So something that I find, if I'm struggling to hear it, I can kind of turn the cane on, have the obstacle detection pointing at the door, and when it stops buzzing, I can recognise that the door's open. I don't know if that's its intended use, but there's interesting things you can do with it. That navigation, though, is the real highlight for me. The obstacle detection, you know, it's good, but I could live without it. But that navigation is where it really comes in for me, because, you know, being able to control it remotely and be able to have all your directions in one app, no matter what you're doing, whether you're on walking or on public transport, that's the real highlight, and not having to touch the phone to change it. It's just a shame that that's not working, or doesn't seem to be working for me at the minute. And we will obviously keep you updated with that when we hear back from WeWalk.
I need a cane to be almost disposable. You know, I'm always leaving mine in taxis and pubs and other places that I visit, you know. And I keep a couple of spare canes in a drawer at home, because I know what I'm like. And I do get through, you know, maybe two or three or more a year. that's not really a good idea with a smart cane, because obviously it's a little bit more expensive, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you wouldn't want to lose this. wouldn't. And that is one downside. I mean, I can't remember the last time I lost a cane. I think it was a few years ago. But yeah, I must admit, every time I, if I'm using this, every time I go somewhere, I'm like, right, I need to just make sure, absolutely sure that I've got the cane, because that would sting if this one gets lost. That's an expensive cane.
You're clearly more responsible than I am. How about the ergonomics then? All that tech in the cane, does it make it a bit heavier to carry? Is that going to be an issue for somebody who maybe, you know, is a little bit you know, not quite as strong as a young strapping lad like yourself?
Don't know about young and strapping. It's to be fair, I've heard a lot of criticisms about the weight of it. I don't find it too bad. It is heavier than a normal cane, and it is, the handle is a little bit chunkier, I suppose. You know, it's a little bit more difficult to kind of get your hand around it. But personally, I don't find it too bad. It's really one of those products where you need to get hands on with it before you buy it. You need to kind of try it out, see what you think. You know, it's worth getting in touch with WeWalk or with R&IB, or heading over to one of the events if you can, like, for example, Site Village. I imagine they will be there this year if there's one near you.
Yeah, well, they're in Cardiff and hopefully Birmingham as well.
Yeah, hopefully. One thing that I can't ignore, though, the real elephant in the room for me, is that they state in the user guide that it's not water resistant, so you've got to be careful if you're using this in the rain. And maybe that's less of an issue in some parts of the world, but, I mean, here in England...
Well, you live near Manchester, don't you? Which famously, the weather in Manchester is always tremendous.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let us know what you think. Expensive? Bulky? Not water-resistant enough for you? Would you try a smart cane? Or do you think, actually, the benefits of knowing where obstacles are before you touch them with your cane, knowing when those quiet lift doors open, is that really worth it for you? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Well, Callum, thank you so much for taking that really deep dive into the world of WeWalk. And of course, if there are any updates, we will bring those to you. Callum Stoneman, thanks very much.
With more and more of us using social media, and let's face it, there's a lot of social media out there to use, how do you make sure everyone can understand your posts, your tweets? Well, there are ways for you to make your images more accessible than you may think. Now, I'm joined by Becky Brynolf from R&IB, and I think it's fair to say, Becky, social media is your thing.
Yes, I'd say so. I'm the head of social media for R&IB. I've been working in social media for about 10 years now, so I know a thing or two.
So what are the sort of popular mediums then we talk about social media? Because we've had so many in the past and there always seems to be another one coming online. But I suppose there are some really popular ones as well, aren't there?
Yeah, so you've obviously got Facebook that really kind of kicked it all off properly. And then obviously there's Twitter, which is now owned by Elon Musk. Instagram is a very visually led platform. And then you've got things like TikTok, which are very business focused. Those are kind of the four ones that R&IB uses predominantly. But we are looking to move into other ones like TikTok and Mastodon, which a lot of people are moving into now. And then maybe even Blue Sky, which is turning into a bit of a Twitter competitor.
They are becoming more and more visual. You know, we're getting images and emojis and videos and things. So in terms of R&IB then, you know, you guys are keeping an eye on the accessibility and prompting people on accessibility as well.
That's right. Something that we've noticed, like a certain trend in the last year, is that people are starting to become aware of accessibility features a lot more on social media. What is a bit of an issue is people are misusing them a little bit. So what we're trying to do now in our team, the social media team, is to put out a lot of posts that kind of explain how all the different features should be used and how everyone can make their social media posts accessible and inclusive to everybody.
Now, we're going to talk about one particular piece here, and it's all around images and alt text. You know, I'm blind myself. I use a lot of social media. I put pictures up there as well. And I suppose some people may be wondering, well, why would you put pictures up? Well, to me, everyone does it. It's a nice addition as well. But you really do have to make sure that they are accessible.
That's exactly right. So we're talking about alt text is a feature that everyone should be making good use of on social media. So for anyone who isn't aware, alt text or alternative text, it's a descriptive text that tells you the meaning or context of a visual item in a digital setting. So I guess, in other words, a photo on social media. And so for people who might use screen readers, or put it another way, who listen to the internet, what that means is that the screen reader will read the text aloud for them. And if you've got a well-written, accurate piece of alt text to accompany an image, what that does is it will read that out for the person, and then that dramatically reduces ambiguity and it really improves the user experience.
So if you had put up a tweet with a picture of, I don't know, say, a car on a street, you could put a bit of text which would say, you know, an image of a blue car sitting on a street beside a lamppost with a person standing beside it wearing a white t-shirt and blue jeans, something like that.
Exactly. I think the most important thing to include in alt text is what is the most important information that the user needs to gather from this. So, for example, some poor examples we've seen in the past is maybe around rail strike information. Rail Network will post an image just detailing when all the strikes are going to happen on which networks. And what we've seen sometimes is the alt text just says flyer showing rail strikes.
Yeah,
but all the information is it's missing. So how would a person know, like, when the rail strikes are happening, which lines are affected? So that's the kind of, you know, it's the important information that really needs to be included. And that can even go, if you're going down the humorous route as well, like there's a wonderful account called We Rate Dogs on Twitter. And, you know, what they do is just post pictures of dogs all the time. But they do it in a really lovely way because people love dogs. Dogs are cute and wonderful. And so they put a lot of effort into their descriptions to put across the warmth and the humour and just to make you go, aw, by the end of it. Because that's the important information of that image.
Do you have a lot of characters available to you to do alt text?
You do. On Twitter, you have 1,000. I think it does vary across different platforms. And I got to say that Twitter, for its faults, does have probably the most accessible way for anyone to add alt text. It's a little trickier on things like Facebook and Instagram. But what's good news there is that, you know, when you're writing the message you would put with a post anyway, you do have lots of characters there. So if you wanted to, and this is something I do a lot and we do on the RNIB accounts, is we just put the image descriptions right there in the posts. And that means you don't necessarily need a screen reader. Like even just people who are sighted, who are looking at the post, can see the alt text as well. And we hope that that sets a good example for others so that they can get ideas of how to write good alt text.
When you put your alt text in, it's not something which will appear visually then. You can see what you're typing, obviously, but once it goes to the image, then it's invisible except to screen readers. Is that right?
On most platforms, yes, but not on Twitter. So if, say, you're scrolling through your feed now while you're listening to this and you come across a tweet with an image in it, if somebody's added alt text in the bottom left-hand corner, there'll be a little symbol that says alt in capital letters. And if you click on that, anybody can take a look at what that says.
In terms of putting the alt text on, is that just as easy?
That is really, really easy. So when you are, you know, setting up your tweet, you'll get an option to add an image description. So there's no ambiguity there about what that button is for. And so you basically click on that, add your image description, and then press save, and away you go. And it is a little trickier on other platforms. Like some things, like on Instagram, for instance, it's hidden behind like advanced settings and another tab and another tab. So in those instances, we just say, keep it really simple, just include it right there in the copy.
In terms of other images then, you know, things like emojis, which the Joy screen reader or voiceover things would read out anyway. Does that work with memes as well? Can they have alt text put on them?
Oh yeah, we absolutely recommend including alt text when it comes to really humorous things like memes or GIFs, for example. You can do it with those too. Because again, I think there's this sort of perception that maybe blind or partially sighted people, they only really want the really crucial information. But I think everybody has a right to the silly stuff as well as the serious stuff. So absolutely be inclusive there. And I really like that you've brought up emojis, because that's an interesting one. So many people can sort of use emojis to substitute words or can really go overboard with emojis. Something that's really important to understand is that screen readers will read out every single individual one, which we've highlighted on our channels before. So there's a member of my team who's a screen reader user, and whenever she comes across a tweet that, you know, goes a bit overboard on the emojis, she'll do a screen reader screen recording for us. And sometimes it can be quite funny, sometimes it can be quite annoying to have to listen to, you know, 280 characters worth of the crying laughing emoji. And just second to that as well, what some people think the emojis are called, you know, what you might refer to them as with your friends, are not necessarily what the official name of the emoji is, which is what the screen reader will read out. So you can't be 100% sure that the message you're trying to convey is the message that everybody is going to get.
something just finally that I thought is quite important as well. You know, we're talking about obviously the funny stuff, we're sharing pictures and memes, GIFs, that kind of thing. But businesses as well are using, and charities I suppose too, you know, they use social media to sell products or to promote events as well. You know, I've come across a lot of things on social media and there's an image and I'm like, well, I don't know what it is, so I'm not interested. So for me as well, it's you're missing out on a market too, if you want to look at it from a business sense.
That's a really good point, actually. There are more than 2 million people with sight loss in the UK, and we know that according to Facebook, only 7% of these people feel reflected in the advertising that they encounter every day. And what we find particularly interesting with social media is that if people feel excluded from your brand, from your business on social media, they don't always complain. You know, 71% of the time, they'll just leave or unfollow you and you won't know. And that will be, you know, crucial kind of business or feedback or ways that you can like improve your business that you're missing out on. We've definitely noticed some hesitance for people to use alt text. I've been really surprised actually to see the number of people who, you know, claim to be really, really good social media managers, for example, for like huge brands or have like, they set up these big profiles and that they have a reluctance to use alt text. And I don't think it's because they don't care. I think it's because they don't really know how to get started. And I would always just say, if anybody is in any doubt, just give it a go. Just start. Like, progress is better than perfection, because if you aim for perfection, then you're never really going to get going anyway. And, you know, follow other accounts, learn, ask people if you're getting it right. Really consider, like, if you couldn't see this image, what is the important information that you want people to take away? Because it's always better to be inclusive. Like, inclusive content is good content.
Becky, some wise words there, and extremely easy to make lots of your images accessible with alt text. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Tech Talk, and that's it. We are almost out of here. Don't forget, of course, we're keen to hear what technology is on your radar, what's working well and what isn't. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk is how you get in touch with us. And do tune in next week when we'll be hearing more about the NaviLens trial at Wolverhampton bus station. And we'll be speaking with Caroline Casey from the Valuable 500. But from myself, Dave Williams, and Callum Stoneman.
Bye for now. See you next week.
Bye-bye.